Well, in the Link's continuing series of interviews with Canadian authors, today we meet Kim Tui, author of the book Rue. That's simply two letters, R-U. And although it won the Governor General's Award for Fiction, it's actually a mixture of fact and remembered images, but told in a series of brief remembered moments in the most thought-provoking and poetic prose. It's Kim Tui's story of her childhood in a privileged family in Hanoi, whose lives were dramatically changed under the Viet Cong. Later came another dramatic and risky escape, a squalid refugee camp, and a new life in a very strange and different country of Canada. And much later, there was a return visit to Vietnam as a successful Canadian lawyer and translator. Kim Tui's first book is a truly wonderful literary experience, and it's beautifully translated from the original French by Sheila Fishman. And I have three copies of Rue to give away, but first, my conversation with the author. Kim Tui, thank you for joining us in studio today.
Thank you for having me.
A very, very interesting book, very poetic as well. I can't get over the way this is the most poetic prose that I have read in a long time.
Really? Because, you know, I don't master French so well or English, and so I just love words. And maybe that's why, because for every word, I really had to choose them, you know, consciously and intentionally, and I would weight them. You would see me, you know, putting words in my hands, basically, and go, oh, which one is better or which one is heavier? And what I wanted for the book was that for it to be very light and silent and invisible. So I always try to choose the lightest word of the two. You know, to me, words have smell and texture, and they're 3Ds. So maybe that's why, you know, each word had been thought through.
Well, it seems to work, because the images that you present, without necessarily describing them in a typical way, for example, you know, it's not just a red flower, it's or just a kiss on the cheek. It has so much more weight to it.
And again, it's because I don't. It's a learned language, I think, and that's why I have to think about it. I don't have the right word right away. And so in order to explain, a microphone, I don't know the word microphone. So I have to explain the whole context around the microphone so that you can understand that I'm talking about a microphone, or that I have to look it up and see what is the word. And before I could do that, I had to see the whole context, you see. And maybe that's why I couldn't be specific.
Was this originally written in Vietnamese or
in French? Okay. In French, because I don't master Vietnamese well enough. Okay, I don't master French, nor English, nor Vietnamese. Any of the three languages, basically. And no, Vietnamese, I arrived in Canada when I was 10. So I can still read and write, but I don't think in Vietnamese. I really think in French, because I learned to love in French, I guess. And once you learn to love in French, then you just stay with French.
We should give a big hand to congratulations to Sheila Fishman, who translated this into English. In fact, when you say you don't speak Vietnamese very well, when you went back to Vietnam, people got a strange impression from you.
Yes, because number one, I'm a lot fatter, you know. I'm bigger than most Vietnamese, I think, even though I
weighed... What was the comment that somebody made to you, the restaurant guy?
Yes. A young waiter, young learning apprentice waiter, he came up to me and he said, how come you speak to me in Vietnamese? And I said, I'm Vietnamese. And he said, no, you're too fat to be a Vietnamese. And he was right, you know, even though I weighed, 45 kilograms, you know, maybe I could go down to 42 or 40 to be normal, but... I was not that big, but to him, and I understood only later when I started writing the book, is that it was not about the weight.
And this is where the images comes in that I was talking about.
Yeah, and it's about the movement of the hands. You know, I use my hands to speak, and my face is so expresses so much emotions, and the Vietnamese are not used to that, especially from a woman, right? And then we walk very quickly right here in Canada because it's cold, I think. We're always at a very fast pace. And in Vietnam, you cannot walk at that pace, because then you will be dripping in sweat,
yeah.
Right? So everything, would tell you exactly where I came from. and that was not Vietnam. And I was big because I would take more space, yeah. right? When we talk with our hands, we take up more space, and our voice too. A Vietnamese person would never speak with such, a determined tone, whereas I have a very big voice and I laugh a lot, and that takes up a lot of space, so I become fat.
So, because, again, the Vietnamese would tend to be a little bit self-effacing in some respects, and you were very, as you say, expressive. And
just Canadian, yeah. you know? Just yeah. Canadian. I was just Canadian. I don't think I was overly expressive, but for Vietnamese, yes, of course. In comparison, you know, a Westerner and an Easterner, and especially for a girl, you know, and you see how Vietnamese women are dressed, the Vietnamese dress, it constrains you, you know, it forces
very tight,
you,
yeah.
yeah, it forces you to make very small gestures, because in that dress, if you lift up your arm, the whole dress would open up, so you can. It's very sexy, actually. Mm. I never thought about it, but so that's why, you know, we cannot make grand gestures. Yeah.
The book, first of all, the book is called Ru. What is the significance of that?
Ru in Vietnamese means a lullaby, or to lull a child to sleep. And in Vietnamese, you don't have that sentence where you say you put your child to bed or things like that. So women would use it daily. They say, oh, I finish washing the dishes and then lull the baby to sleep, for example. And to me, because I have this perspective, I think, of the Vietnamese language, because I don't know it so well anymore and don't speak it every day, I just thought it was so poetic, you know, that word to be used in daily context. And they don't realize that it's a beautiful word, and it's so light and so soft. And in French, it means a small stream. And that also, it's old French, though. It's no longer used by anybody. But both senses are exactly what I wanted to do for the book, for it to be very silent. Because in real life, I'm not silent. I'm very noisy. And I wanted the book to be very light and soft. And, you know, a lullaby, usually when you listen to it, you fall asleep before the end of the mm-hmm. song.
I'm speaking with Kim Thuy, author of Ru, R-U is the way it's spelled. And it is an award-winning book, your first novel. This is, there's so much powerful sadness in this book in a way, but you don't portray it as sadness.
I don't think I've, yeah.
Or it's difficulty, hardship I'm thinking of, you know?
Yeah, but I think it's just part of living. Living is a struggle, right? And living is demanding, but also so enriching because you're learning. And learning is not an easy thing. And there's a saying in Vietnamese that we're not born human. And my mom always reminds me this, that we have to become human. And in order to become human, we have to learn. We have to learn to speak, to eat, to stand, to walk. We have to learn everything. And sometimes when I take shortcuts, she would say, you know, you can live your whole life and never become a human if you keep on taking shortcuts. Mm-hmm. So it's just the challenges and the obstacles are just part of what life is. And also because I've become so much stronger after all these struggles, I would say, or challenges. Not struggles, but challenges, right?
Well, you've gone through some difficult challenges. escaping and, the potential for thugs and pirates and robbery and hardship and everything else. You were, in fact, born at the height of the Vietnamese War, right?
Yeah, in 68, where they deployed a lot of American soldiers, actually, on Vietnamese soil. So, yeah, at the height of that war.
Would I be correct in saying that you were born into an upper middle class setting?
Yeah, intellectual, political family, I guess. They are all, many of them were politicians. And yeah, we were privileged, I would say, because we had access to education.
And this radically, radically changed everything that your parents knew and that you would come to know, right?
Yes, and it was a total change. But luckily, we had a four-month period of refugee camp where everything went down to zero. It was just, we became basically subhuman, right? So when you come to Canada, after that 4 months of emptiness, I would say, of nothingness, you don't compare with what you had before. Mm-hmm. You're just thankful that you have a new life, that you have a new beginning, starting over. And yeah, so you're just thankful. And for sure, I think that if we left directly from Vietnam, from our comfortable house to Canada, maybe we would have found it more difficult. But because we had that chance to live in a refugee camp for all those months, everything else came as a gift afterwards.
What was it like for you to go back to Vietnam? You described the sort of the post-war situation there after also describing some of the hardships and how, you know, the communists took over your house and forced you to live in a tiny little corner of what was a big house, and the robberies and the confiscation of goods and people selling off goods just to survive and all that. And the one thing, there was an incident there where a young child, a six-year-old, was delivering a message from one place to the other and was shot by the soldiers and the anguish of the mother and so on and so forth. What was it like to go back to a post-war Vietnam?
There are so much emotions. And the first time when I went back to work as a lawyer, I would tell you that I had to shield myself from all of that, from all the past, from all the memories, or even from thinking, because I was there to work, right? Because otherwise you would see too much and you would feel too much and you cannot go on with your days, I would say, and to be efficient and productive and professional. But just lately I had the chance to accompany the Governor General for an official visit, and we went to the War Memorial. And I didn't expect anything, because you see that on TV, that ritual, right, for us to go and put flowers, wreath of flowers. And I just thought, oh, it was just one of the activities we had to do. And I just followed the convoy. And I had never cried so much. And I think it was the first time that all of a sudden the history, the weight of history came to me. And you don't identify, you no longer identify if those soldiers were from the communist side or the capitalist side or the American-supported side. They were just soldiers. They were just people dying for wars, because of wars. I never thought that it would move me to no end. And to go back to a country with an official delegation was also a moment of, I don't know, I went down of that plane on that red carpet, and I wonder if there could be another country where I could wear a Vietnamese dress and be part of a Canadian delegation and salute the Canadian national anthem. Mm. I don't think it would be possible. You know, and that was the first time that I realized that home was Canada. Mm.
But at the same time, you still have, and you mentioned this throughout the book, the weight of Vietnamese history. It weighs on you nonetheless. And
for sure, yeah.
There's a passage in the book which I thought might be interesting for you to read. If you'd like to set that up about tattoos and scars and things.
And, you know, wars and transitions and chaos always create terrible situations. And in Vietnam, of course, you know, at one point there were, I don't know why or how it came to be, but there were, I don't know how to talk about this, you know, prostitution and what we do to women. And I talk a lot about the women in Vietnam, because they are the one who carried the weight of history without ever being mentioned, almost, or very rarely, because all the men left for war for so many years. So Vietnam without the women would have disappeared from the face of the earth, I think. So the women were there during the war. Women were there again after the war. And women were there to carry all the sadness, you know, from the men. And so in certain cases with prostitution, it could become very perverted, I would say. And so I've heard stories about what men do to women. And so it's a very short passage.
This is Kim Thuy reading from her award-winning book, Rue.
So when I meet young girls in Montreal or elsewhere who injure their bodies intentionally, deliberately, who want permanent scars to be drawn on their skin, I can't help secretly wishing they could meet other young girls whose permanent scars are so deep they're invisible to the naked eye. I would like to sit them face to face and hear them make comparisons between a wanted scar and an inflicted scar, one that's paid for, the other one that pays off, one visible, the other one impenetrable, one inordinately sensitive, the other unfathomable, one drawn, the other misshapen.
And that is Kim Tui once again reading from her book, Rue. Kim, throughout the book, you flash back and forth from images as a youngster to an adult, from Canada to the refugee camp, to the boat trip, to post-war Vietnam. Usually we think of a story like this would be a kind of linear, you know. Mm. I was born, we lived in this situation, we had to escape, we people lost money, they were robbery, thieves, people trying to hide money, we arrived here, and so on and so forth. But you've done this skimming route back and forth. Is that because that's the way we sort of remember our lives, but little snippets and vignettes along the way?
Yeah, probably. I think, it depends on when you meet someone, you don't start by saying that I was born on whatever date, and you discover the person from one conversation to the next, right? You would never understand fully what that person has experienced. And that's how I would say I built the book. But I didn't really build the book the way I wrote it, because I didn't know what I was doing. I was just playing with words, and that's how it came about. But to me, it was almost like a conversation. You just go from one thing to the other. One thing led to the next. But there was an internal rhythm. It's very funny because there's a journalist in France who asked me about the fragmentation of the text or the destructuration of the text. And I said, to me, there was no fragmentation. It was just one piece. At the beginning, it was not even divided into paragraphs because it was just one thing led to another. And I have no idea why it was being written like that.
But it's certainly an extremely well-written, very, very beautiful book. And Kim Tui, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And our feature interview this week has been with Kim Tui, this first book recounting her experience as a child in Hanoi, escaping the Vietnam and through to her eventual return visit as a successful Canadian lawyer and translator, is superbly written literary experience. It's recounted in a series of remembered vignettes, wonderfully poetic, thought-provoking, and I have 3 copies to give away. And for a chance to win, tell me in a paragraph or two of a thought-provoking travel experience you had, not just a marvelous trip, but some travel that made you pause and reflect on your life. Send us an email, put RU, the 2 letters, RU, in the subject line, and be absolutely sure to include your full postal address. And our email is thelink@rcinet.ca or thelink@cbc.ca.